We're reading from Mark 7:25-30 and 8:11-17. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of his daughter. But Jesus said to her, "Let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she answered and said to him, "Yes, Lord, even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For this saying, go your way. The demon has gone out of your daughter." And when she came to her house, found the demon had gone out and her daughter lying on the bed. Then the Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. But he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, "Why does this generation seek a sign? Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation." And he left them, and getting onto the boat again, departed to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, and they did not have any more than one loaf with them in the boat. Then he charged them, saying, "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It is because we have no bread." But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive, not nor understand? Is your heart still hardened?"
Please be seated. So in this passage, we are looking at bread. You're going to see bread. It almost sounds like Jesus is calling someone a dog. And the Pharisee, and then the disciples are really misunderstanding Jesus when it talks about unleavened bread. So let's look at each of these because they are really fascinating. This message is really all about bread, and you know, we've entitled it, "What's So Bad About Sourdough Bread?" Which I really actually enjoy sourdough bread. So this month we're looking at how Jesus trained the disciples. And this morning we're coming into this section in which Jesus appears to give a brush off to a woman who wants her daughter healed, and he seems to call her a dog. And he doesn't think a dog should have children's bread. And then the woman, surprisingly, doesn't get really offended, but she says, "But dog eat the crumbs of the children's bread." So they travel to the... So what happens here is they travel from Tyre and Sidon, where this conversation takes place, and then they travel all the way to the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. And there, he's healing people. He feeds 4,000 people. They take up 7 baskets of leftover bread. And then they get into a boat, and then they come to Dalmanutha on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. So now they're on the western side of the Sea of Galilee, and they have this discussion there. And he's debated by those who want to see more signs, even though he just fed 4,000 people. And he won't do it. And then he gets in the boat, and then he goes back. There's a lot of going back and forth on the Sea of Galilee. And he gets in the boat, and then he asks the disciples, you know, about the bread. And then they only have one loaf of bread with them, and they think that they're in trouble because he says, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees." So you in this passage, you go from breadcrumbs to 7 baskets full of leftover bread to one loaf of bread. So there's a lot about bread here, and there's a lot about how you make bread in these passages. And so Jesus warns the disciples. He warns them about the leaven of the Pharisees. And, you know, it's like, well, what is the leaven of the Pharisees? And what he's talking about is, and we'll get to this, so what this leaven of the Pharisees is. Leaven is another term for yeast. Now, how many in here bake your bread, or you have baked bread? How many have done that? It's not an easy thing to do to get that right. All right, so you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but which will be really easy to do. Yeast is another word for leaven. And what happens is, you know, if you want bread to rise, you put a little yeast in it, and if you bake it soon enough, what happens is the bread will rise, because the yeast, what it does is it begins to digest the sugar in the bread, and then it breaks it down into alcohol and CO2. And, you know, as you bake it, you know, the alcohol evaporates, and then the CO2 is caught inside the bread, and that's what causes it to rise. So far, so good. But if you allow that yeast in there too long before you start baking it, then it eats up all the sugar in the bread, and then it's unedible. You know, it tastes awful. You can't eat it. So that's what yeast does. And Jesus uses this leaven or yeast to show the disciples about what is called the leaven of the Pharisees. And it's really about sin and unbelief on the heart. And that's what we're going to talk about. Jesus is so brilliant at this metaphor of yeast or leaven. You could just pass over it so easily until you really think about how leaven operates inside of bread and how this is what is, he calls it the leaven of the Pharisees. It's like what happens on the heart, this, not yeast, but what sin and unbelief does to the heart. And that's what we're going to look at. There are three things that when you think about yeast or how leaven operates, you know, first of all, it's hidden. It's not something that you see. You have two bakers, you know, one can be not using yeast, the other one is using yeast, and at first you wouldn't even know the difference. It just looks the same. It's hidden. Secondly, that it spreads. That's another thing about yeast. It spreads. It just, you know, goes throughout the whole dough. And, you know, the principle from that you'll learn is that, you know, it's like, you know, sin never stays in the same spot. And then the third thing we're going to look at is that it's sour. So it always sucks the sweetness out of something. So let's look at each one of these, because Jesus is saying to the disciples, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. All right, so let's have a look. Okay, number one is sin is sneaky. That's the thing that you learn about this, about the leaven of the Pharisees. Two bakers working the same lump of bread dough, but you can't see which one has yeast and which one doesn't. If you looked at the life of a Pharisee, here's what you would see. On the outside, the Pharisee, they kept rules. They didn't cheat. They did the right things. They kept out of trouble. They were good people. You know, outwardly, you would want them as your neighbors. They kept their yard kept. They mowed it. They took down their Christmas decorations on time. They didn't use spray laser lights on their house. They didn't use gaudy Christmas decorate. Wait a minute, I'm talking more about myself now. But they you wanted them as neighbors. They picked up after their dog. Their yard was mowed. But inside of their heart, you wouldn't be able to tell what was going on in the inside of their heart. Outwardly, everything looked good. Inside, bad. And what Jesus wants his disciples to know is this. He says, sin is essentially something that's working on the inside of your heart. It's hidden. It impacts the thoughts, the intentions, the motives, your viewpoints. It works inside. It's internal. Until, as bread, when it rises, and then you can see it in all of its nastiness when it finally breaks out. And so Jesus shows, you know, he shows us what makes us do the things that we do. It's the thoughts and the intents of the heart. It gets started down here. So, Woody Allen, you probably heard of him. He was kind of a comedian, but he did all these movies. One of these movies, he says, the heart wants what it wants. It begins in the heart. That's where this all starts, and then it rises up, it spreads. So what does this look like? You know, especially if this leaven of the Pharisees, if it's in the heart, what does that look like? Okay, let's give some examples of this. Let's think about what sin looks like on the heart and then what grace looks like on the heart. Okay, so first of all, basically the essence of sin says something like this. your life for my life. And grace switches that, and grace says, my life for your life. So, for instance, you know, at a coffee shop, you cut in line in front of someone, you know, your life for mine. Or if you're in traffic and people are trying to get in, now, I don't know if you ever do this, but like, you know, they're merge lane, you know, and you're in this lane merging, and, you know, and you see that person, you kind of like speed up. Have you ever done that? You know, you kind of like speed up, you know, you keep that like, you know, gap, you know, kind of closed in between you and the person ahead of you. You don't want to let, that's your life for mine. But grace, you know, allows that person in. See, my life for yours. That's, you know, that's simple. But let's ratchet it up here, okay? And it's everywhere. So you can get something nice for your spouse. You know, take her to dinner, a date, my life for yours. Or you can say, you know, I really need to stay home tonight and watch the ball game. This is a really important baseball game. I need to see this game or a hockey game. So something like that. That's your life for mine. You know, it's at the heart of everything, you know. You can apply that principle to your marriage. You can apply it to your parenting. You know, my kids were so good at doing this to me. They probably listened to messages and got these phrases, but like, Dad, you never spend quality time with us. You know, like, what kid talks like that, you know, quality time, you know. And I even got it this week. I even got it on Thursday from my number two daughter, you know. We don't spend time with me individually, you know, without everyone, you know, without all the other kids. But I appreciate that. I do, because she still wants to spend time with me. Well, I can't make it to your game. I can't make it to your dance. I can't spend time with you because I really have important meetings at work. Now, boy, I tell you, all parents have faced that. And it's a really tough one because, you know, you can think inside that, hey, I'm doing this for the family, when actually it's really your life for mine. See, it's hidden. It's inside. There was an older famous Christian scholar named John Owen, and he lived in the 1700s, and he put it this way. He said, just as shallow brooks are noisier and deeper streams are quieter, so sin, when it's strongest, is quiet. That's it. It's most quiet. It's so deep down you don't see it, and it's operating. So let's just apply it to our hearts right this morning, right now. If you and I are not upset over sin or fearful of it or troubled by it in our hearts, or I'm not seeing it at work in my own heart, then we're not aware of what's going on inside. There is a cancer in the heart, and that's what Jesus is getting across. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. It's hidden. You're not seeing it. You don't see it at work, but it is at work. When it's hidden, it's deep down, it works, it's most powerful. And this is the thoughts that are allowed to go on. The excuses. It's why we need others to call us out on things. And I hate that. You know, I hate when I get called out on stuff because it makes me feel bad. And who wants to feel bad? But we need to have that, though, because we don't see the leaven going on in our hearts. So, you know, you can be like the Pharisees. You know, as long as I'm good on the outside, you know, my behavior isn't offensive to other people, but inside, my heart is coveting. It's coveting other spouses, other people's homes. It's coveting other people's lives. And I have this bitterness or this envy that is inside of me. Now, okay, so that's the first thing. It's hidden. Beware of the hiddenness of sin in the heart. Now, secondly, it gets more negative. You have to wait till you get to the third point before there's some positive, life-changing news here. Number two is, how sin spreads fast. It's sneaky and it spreads. And, you know, this is what, like, where two bakers are they're baking with, you know, same dough. You know, one puts yeast in, and you take that dough and you put some leaven in it, and it goes to work immediately, and it starts, you know, goes throughout that whole lump. It's not going to stay in one spot. Leaven spreads. It gets all over. It eats the sugar everywhere. You know, it's what makes the bread rise. Makes it beautiful. And what Jesus is getting across to us in this metaphor of the yeast, he says, you can never limit, or we take the principle, you can never limit sin to one corner in your life. It's like gangrene. It's just gonna spread. You know, if you wait around, you have to cut off the foot, or it's gonna kill you. In other words, if you don't kill it, it will kill you. Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Do not let this stuff go on in your heart. It's going to spread. All right, so let's think of a few examples of this, all right? Let's say you resent someone. All right, now just think about someone you resent right now. Maybe you have a grudge against them, or maybe they slighted you, okay, and you resent them. That's one little single thought. But it's not going to stay there. Because you allow that thought to fester. You allow it to go on. And then what happens? Well, then the resentment spreads. And then you start resenting those who are friends with that person. I resent their kids. I resent what they do. I resent what they own. I resent their job. And it's like the resentment, it's not only that the resentment spreads, it intensifies. For example, resentment turns into bitterness, and then it turns into hatred. And then you fantasize about what it would be like if that person wasn't around anymore. The human heart really can do this stuff. You know, in 1843, Edgar Allan Poe wrote this very famous novel, and you know, when you're a kid in school, you end up, I guess they still read this, it's called The Tell-Tale Heart. You remember this story? You remember what this thing is about? Oh, it's so ugly. So there's this elderly man, he has a cataract on his eye, and it's called the vulture eye. It's ugly looking, it's filmy. And there's another person in the house, he's so distressed by the eye, he resents it. He grows to hate that eye. And you know, these, even though he says he loves the old man, he begins to really resent him for that eye. And then he begins to think about, he hates that eye. He hates that man. And he begins to plot inside about murdering that man who has that cataract on his eye. And, of course, if you ever read the story, you know what happens as resentment takes over. And then the telltale heart. Oh, it's awful. It's just only like Poe could write this material. And you know, you say, well, that's Poe. You know, that's fiction. You know, but let me give you another one. Let me give you another one, a real one. This is real. You know, as a married person, you begin to have inappropriate thoughts about someone that you aren't married to. And then you keep those thoughts alive, or you allow them to keep going, and then it leads to more thoughts of either about that person or some other person, and you don't do anything about that, and then it won't stay in a corner. It begins to take over your heart, and you like to think that you know it's going to stop, but it doesn't stop. It becomes full, you know, it could become full blown unfaithfulness, or it could become something where it starts to cross that line. Or maybe it doesn't cross the line, and then it just sucks all the sweetness and the loveliness out of your own marriage. And then what happens? The ruin, the heartache. All right, so the principle is that if you leave sin alone, it will not leave you alone. So a number of years ago, probably 10 years ago, you know, I was meeting with this husband, and I was working with this very issue, and you know, there was this entertaining of inappropriate thoughts, and it was, you know, and the wife became aware of it, you know, and so I met with him, And I'll never forget this. I was sitting in my office with him, and you know, there was no question about whether this was appropriate or not. I you know, so fortunately, you know, he was ready. It's like, I repent of it. And here's what I said to him. I said, from this day on, this other party is a dead person. In other words, she doesn't exist any longer to you. You do not acknowledge her. You do not return a phone call to her. You do not run into her. You do nothing. It is as if they do not exist. You have to root this out. Because if you leave this alone, it will not leave you alone. And that is how sin works upon the heart. It spreads. It never stays in one spot. Okay, so we've got to go on, and I'm going to get to this last point here. And this is where it starts to turn. Story gets a little better here. And that is, this last thing is how sin sours. And I say, this is such a negative sermon, you know, the leaven of the Pharisees. But you leave yeast in bread long enough without baking it, eats up all the sugar, it sucks out the sweetness, and it leaves it unedible. Can't even enjoy it anymore. Think about your relationship. And that's what happened with the Pharisees. Now, if you look at chapter 8, you know, look at verse 11. What does it say there? It says that the Pharisees came out and they began to dispute with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. Now, Jesus just fed 4,000 people. It wasn't like it's been a long while. He just fed them, and they are debating with Jesus. They wanted a sign from heaven, which means they wanted a miracle. And they're saying this, even though he just made bread for 4,000 people, that's a lot of folks. That's a cruise ship worth, by the way. They're saying, we are having trouble believing you are the Messiah, Jesus. Would you just help us out here and perform a miracle that'll just totally change your minds, would you? And what Mark says, it says, then the Pharisees came right after the miracle. But that's not the miracle. That's not what they wanted. They wanted a different miracle. And here's what's happened. They soured on Jesus. This is the leaven of the Pharisees. They soured on him. He was not living up to their expectations. See, and what was happening in the heart, they were saying, you know, our sin and our unbelief, the problem's not with us, it's with Jesus. He's not giving us the signs that we expect to see. If he'd only do more for us. Now, why was Jesus falling short for him? Why was he falling short for the Pharisees? Now, if you think about this, they expected, their hearts were prepared for a different kind of Messiah than the kind that Jesus was. They were expecting a powerful person called Messiah who'd handle their enemy, Rome. They wanted to be back on top. They wanted to be in a position of power. They had been oppressed for so long. Even Jesus' disciples, they keep this thought alive in Acts 1. Jesus did not come as the Messiah that they expected. He came as the Messiah they needed. See, the miracles, the signs that Jesus did, they were redemptive miracles, healing people. The Pharisees, they wanted a different sign. They wanted Jesus to take political power, you know, fly around the world, you know, and you know, throw, you know, this would be like from X-Men, that's it. You know, you could throw fireballs and rise up and, you know, manipulate steel, do something that shows power like this. And of course, this is not what Jesus is going to do. They wanted to see good people rewarded, like their goodness, recognize our righteousness. See, when you leave yeast inside bread long enough, it eats up all the sugar, sucks the sweetness out, makes it sour. And when you leave sin in the heart and it just keeps going, you get sour on everything. It just sucks the sweetness out. Until finally, nothing will satisfy them. And that's why Jesus says to him, I'm not going to give you a sign. He just did. He just fed 4,000. Before that, he's fed 5,000. You know, the 5,000 was primarily a Jewish audience. 4,000, primarily a Gentile audience. He says, I'm not going to give you a sign because it's never good enough for you. You won't believe. You won't believe. Let me put it like this. Behind the sour heart of the Pharisees was this idea, God owes me something. For the Pharisees, it was how good a person I am. You know, but a person who knows that they're a sinner, they know that their lives are forfeit, they realize that God owes them nothing. And the Pharisees were just the opposite of that. They don't believe in grace. They blame God for their lack of faith. They blame God for not giving them the signs that would really convince them. And that's why they would not believe. And that's why they would blame Jesus. You don't do the signs that would really make me believe. And Jesus says, you're always going to be unhappy. You're always going to be restless. And they're saying, God needs to give me a sign. He needs to answer this prayer. He needs to make this happen in my life. And that's a sour heart where yeast, the sin and the unbelief is spread in the heart. It's like, God's on trial before me. So where's the good news in all of this? This would be a great point where the preacher would stop and then he would apply and he would say, hey, are you sour on Jesus this morning? You know, and we've already talked about, you know, how sin is hidden, you know, you don't see it, and how it spreads all around, you know. And then the preacher, he should, on the third point, just take the dagger and really drive it and turn it, you know, and just make you feel really awful about yourself. And it's like, well, you sour puss, you know, and I feel so great. Now I can leave church and go home and climb into bed the rest of the day. Is there any good news in this message? Well, there is. So who avoided the sin of the Pharisees? Who avoided the leaven of the Pharisees? Who was it that avoided it? It was the very first thing we read about. It was the woman. It was the Syrophoenician woman. Now, what happened? She has a daughter who's demon-possessed. That's awful. And she goes up to Jesus in chapter 7, verse 28. She says, heal my daughter. And Jesus turns to her. And this is one of the more difficult phrases in the New Testament. He says, I'm here for the children of Israel. I can't be giving children's bread to you dogs. Okay, now, I want you to think about this. If she had a sour heart, this is the place you get really indignant, and you take your toys home, and you say, I'm out of here. No one's going to call me a dog. I can go find someone else. That's how a normal person would respond to that. But she doesn't respond like that. She doesn't storm off. What does she do? She doesn't have a sour heart. So what is happening? She says this. She goes, yes, Lord, but there's always leftovers for us dogs. This is what she's saying. It's amazing. She says, yes, Lord, I'm a dog. But I'm not mad about you saying that. I'm not mad about you calling me a dog. I know I'm not fit for the presence of God. I know that. I am flawed. I am sinful. Now, you say, well, you know, we just had to lay down our dog a week ago, and we love our dog. There was nothing wrong with our dog. And I love that dog. Why would it be bad to be called a dog? Well, you go to Juarez, Mexico, and you see the dogs on the street. You don't touch those dogs. You don't pet those dogs. You don't want those dogs in your house. And the missionaries tell you don't go near those dogs. They're mangy. They're ugly. They're not fit for our presence. She's agreeing with Jesus. Yes, I am not fit for the presence of God, but she says, you are generous, and your table is filled with bread, and there is more than enough for us dogs. We'll eat the breadcrumbs. And Jesus says, that's faith. And he says, you may go, your daughter is healed. He didn't even have to see the daughter. He didn't have to go to her home. He says, she's healed because this lady got it. She knew she wasn't fit for the present. She knew that God was gracious, and she wanted those breadcrumbs. And Jesus says, come in. She's humble. She's not demanding a sign. She's not saying, you owe me. You don't have to perform for me, she says. She's open for his grace and his generosity. There's a sweet boldness to her. You know, I know you're a merciful God. I know you're gracious. And that's why in verse 29, that her daughter is healed. Now, what needed to happen for her to get breadcrumbs? What is it? You know, and this, probably she didn't understand this, but for in order for her to have breadcrumbs, who is the bread? Who is the bread of life? Well, of course, class, John 6:51. Jesus says, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, eats me, he will live forever. So the Syrophoenician woman, not demanding signs, but asking for breadcrumbs, knows her life is forfeit, no claim on God, but she knows that God is generous. And so what is Jesus? He comes and he is the bread broken for us, so that we could be fed with that bread. Now, what do you mean it was broken for us? She says, yes, I'm a dog. I'm a sinner. I'm not fit for the presence of God. And Jesus says, I am the bread, and I will be broken for you so that you may be fit for the presence of God. There was no leaven in her, no unbelief, and that is where we come to us. How about you? How about us this morning? You know, is there an area in our life where our hearts are sour? You know, where there's unbelief, where there's bitterness, and we want God to come through. We're demanding. We want him to recognize our goodness. Perform for us, God. Here's what you have to do. You have to decide this. And am I going to be the Syrophoenician woman who looks at God and says, you know, I'm not fit for your presence, but I know that you're a gracious God. That's my attitude in my heart. Or are we going to be, you know, the Pharisee? Are we going to be the Phoenician woman, or are we going to be the Pharisee? Phoenician woman or the Pharisee, the sour, you know, perform for us. You know, do it, you know, if you do the right thing, then I'll follow you. Or the Phoenician woman who says, I'm not fit for your presence, but I know that you're gracious. I know that you're gracious. And Jesus says, this is the sweetness. This is sweetness here. The sweetness of faith. And there was just plenty for her. You know, that's what you have to decide. And, you know, Christian, for us, the takeaway today is when Jesus has come in, your heart has to begin to say, and it has to begin to reflect, my life for yours. Because that's what Jesus did. He's bread, my life for yours. I will be broken for you. You know, don't let the yeast, don't let the sin go unchecked in the heart. Don't let it sour your heart. Don't be ruthless with it. Be ruthless with it. Don't allow it to suck all the sweetness out and sour you, you know, towards God, and then become proud and demanding. The Phoenician woman. Oh, Lord. Oh, don't you love how, let's look at it one more time. She says, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs. That's the heart. That's a heart that is not soured, and that's a heart that we're called to this morning. Let's stand and let's pray together. Father, I'm so grateful that we have this passage that is so encouraging at the end that, Lord, all we have to do is just come before you as this Phoenician woman and say, we're not fit for your presence. But we know that you are a God of all grace and that you can scoop us up because you are broken for us. And I pray, Lord, that you would, Lord, enable us to be ruthless with that, with with anything in our hearts that wants to take that away, that wants to sour us on you, or wants to make us into some proud, demanding individual and say, recognize me for my righteousness. Lord, may we become more and more like that Syrophoenician woman. Less and less like the Pharisees who are always demanding and challenging and debating you. May we be the sweet woman who comes and eats the breadcrumbs like the little puppies on the floor. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.